In this episode of Cubs Out Loud, we talk with Tumblr Bear celebrity Daniel, aka Bearberly Crusher, about being Canadian and an amazing list of things about him and his life. From rugby and BDSM to exhibitionism and gaming, we learn how unique and wonderful he is. COL 287 starts now. November 23rd, 2014. I'm Jeff.
Who's your bear? That's right. I am your bear.
And I'm Gary.
Don't hurt nobody with your bad self.
And welcome to Cubs Out Loud, the Bear Podcast of Indeterminate Length, episode number 287. And I just realized that I forgot to load something. Oh, well. I'll put it in later. You'll find out.
That's okay, because I think I just lost my voice.
Yeah. So, I would like to introduce, before we get into what's going on here, I'd like to introduce our guest, Daniel. How are you doing?
Boom shakalaka!
Hello! I am doing very well. Thank you.
Known as Bearberly Crusher on Tumblr. And there is a sound that we didn't hear, but it's going to be there.
It'll be epic. Don't worry.
Don't worry. It's awesome. Actually, you probably already know because you already heard it. Anyways, moving on right into this. Besides me being a little rusty in recording your show, Gary, what's going on?
Been a busy month. Which it's funny because there's a part of me that wonders about this. I don't know if I've talked about it on the podcast, but I have a theory that the whole world, at least I'm going to say the North American continent or the whole perhaps Western Hemisphere, has this very interesting thing about the end of the year becomes very busy. And it's because we have the holidays coming up, obviously. It's about to be Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And then we get into the bigger holidays in December. And everything seems to ramp. Everywhere I look, like every industry seems to be getting busier at this time of year. So everybody's lives get more hectic, which might be the whole, like, I realize we buy into the media sensationalism, you know, of like people being cranky and blah, 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 and overworked. And then we get sick because it's flu season. But so I'm talking about that. I realize I'm rambling. But the point is that I think it's interesting to see how everything kind of like crescendos at the end of the year. The calendar year, I should say. So yeah, it's been a busy month. Had some fun weekends in Cleveland earlier this month that I'll talk about at a later time. And also got the work trip for Texas done. So yeah, I'm looking forward to a week or two of downtime, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I definitely agree with the end of the year being busy because of more than just, you know, we got Thanksgiving, which is still a huge family holiday, as well as Christmas, which are like a month apart. They're really close together. So you have to make plans for both of those. And then also end of the year, which means fiscal years for a whole bunch of people, which is always hectic. When it comes to businesses. So, Daniel, what have you been up to?
Well, November is not quite as busy month for me. Canadian Thanksgiving is actually in October. So we don't have the whole like end of year crush where it's like Black Friday, Cyber Monday, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year. It's just sort of like, yeah. In Canada, it gets really cold and no one does anything. And winter is kind of like you spend your time playing video games and masturbating a lot, and that's about it. So, you know, November, it's working out, getting ready for next year's rugby season, working on my novel, hooking up with guys, kind of my usual life.
Okay, I'm intrigued. You made and like playing games and masturbating is only done during the winter, but everyone I know does that year round. Okay. I'm just clarifying.
Bears in Canada, I have a very strong sort of like, you know, winter you masturbate, then spring everyone starts hooking up a lot. Every spring on Growler, I get like 30 billion messages, and then like winter hits and they all go away. Everyone's so, just like, you know, I don't feel like hooking up.
So the bears in Canada actually go into hibernation.
Pretty much. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but but there's definitely a sort of like spring. Everyone is like coming out and everyone is messaging each other and hooking up a lot. Although Mr. Otto Bear is in January, so there will probably be like a burst of activity around then as well.
Mm-hmm. It's all those bears in one cave.
Exactly.
Right. So it's just because they're all there already.
So. Makes it easier, you know, like, oh, I only have to move. I can hook up right here. You know, it's so much easier.
And notably sexually repressed because they just spent a couple months, you know,
hibernating.
Exactly. You understand us Canadians already.
Okay. Wow. Interesting.
Oh, I don't know if I want to make that claim just yet. But perhaps you will enlighten us in this episode.
You know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Nice.
For me, it's Warlords. Warlords dropped a couple weeks ago. And right now, it's all about getting my toons up to get ready to raid because the raids haven't been released yet. They should be released this week, I think. I can't remember. It's like 2 weeks after launch. So I believe it's this week. Yeah. So I'm getting ready to raid. Pretty dull, I suppose.
No, it's fine. I laugh because I do not know, nor do I much understand WoW. And there's nothing wrong with that. It makes me laugh, though, because it's very much its own unique culture. It has its own language. It has its own thing. So when I meet other people that play WoW, like, I don't know, it's kind of like back in the 80s when, this is a bad reference, analogy, but when you could tell who the nerds were versus the jocks versus the tech rats, as we used to call them. You know what I mean? Like, you could see the population group. So when I'm around a group of guys, mostly bears, and you can tell who the people are who play WoW because one person makes a WoW reference and they kind of congregate together and then they all have this discussion about the game and raids and things. So the WoW listeners appreciate what you say.
Yes. Because it's a new expansion. I mean, at the beginning of the month, and yeah, at the beginning of the month, the beginning of the month, over the first weekend of November, on November 1st, I believe it was, whatever was that Saturday. I think it was first. Yes, first. I actually, at one point, had the StarCraft Global Finals streaming on my television while I had the Hearthstone tournament on my computer. So I tweeted that, and one of the officers of one of my WoW guilds said, "Nerd." But needless to say, I'm a huge sports fan. Esports, that is.
Uh-huh.
Mm. All right.
I'm sure I'll follow your Twitch stream soon.
I don't stream myself, but anyways. And actually, I think it would, if there was a stream, it would probably end up being a Chatterbait stream.
I was just going to say, I'm like, streaming could go one of two ways. It doesn't necessarily have to be about gaming. It could be about camming, or it could be about water sports, but that's a whole other issue.
Speaking of water sports, no, that's a really bad transition. we don't have any feedback this week. We didn't do anything weird, so we didn't do that. Did I do that? So we're going to go right into our topic, which is Daniel himself.
I don't think you can stand an entire podcast of me. I mean, I talk about myself for like 10 minutes. I'm like, well, I'm bored. Let's do something else now.
And see, I think we feel differently. And so for the listeners, we were discussing this right before we started recording. This is a rarity that we have someone who we kind of have mutually followed each other or been aware of each other. And so now we're kind of bringing it all together. We as hosts knew about you through your Tumblr account because you are a Tumblr star slash celebrity, it appears. and I'll explain why I say it that way in a moment. And then we had probably it was a this, that, or other, I think. Wasn't it, Jeff, where I think I had picked Daniel's series of photos from when he was abroad in the woods?
Yeah, I think it was one of her, like, urban rural.
Yeah, it was Undressing in Europe's Woods is what you called it.
Very good. And because of that, you sent us a comment. You actually communicated and said, hey, like, I don't have it pulled up in front of me, but basically it was very complimentary that you appreciated it. We talked about you and picked the pics and you liked the show. And so I took the initiative and said, well, what the hell, like, would you like to be on the show? And you were like, okay, I guess.
The second time I've actually listened to a podcast where I've been on it. So my Magic the Gathering photo set was also on your podcast before. I remember listening to that. I'm like, oh, they're talking about me. It took me a second to clue in when I was listening.
Well, and so I think we can kind of go into talking about that. So your Tumblr account, from what I could check on, I'm not going to do a whole Barbara Walters thing on you, but you have had that a Tumblr account, I want to say, for 5 years.
About 5 years.
Okay. And the two that we just mentioned seem to be one of the more popular posts, or maybe the popular posts. I don't know. I don't know your stats.
My European photo set has been my most popular. Right now it's about 3,000 notes, and that's my most popular photo set ever.
Wow. So how does that feel to know that that many people are like posting and resharing and commenting and so on?
Feels really good. I mean, it's certainly annoying when you see, like, you post and then, like, 2 hours later you see, hey, it's been 2 hours. Someone already stole the photos and reposted them. And that annoys me. But I really enjoy the attention. I really enjoy knowing that other people like it. I've been an exhibitionist for as long as I can remember. There are probably still photos of me that are illegal that are floating around the internet just because I had access to the internet and realized I was an exhibitionist quite early in life. So I don't actually have any of those photos anymore, but I'm sure they're probably still out there. But I really enjoy it. I really enjoy making people happy, and I really enjoy just all the feedback, and it's always just a boost. And now I'm rambling, so I'm going to shut up.
No, that's fine. I want to talk about two things that you brought up. I did notice in your Tumblr account, you recently, I think, kind of ranted a little bit on a couple of images, and you called people out because you were like, hey, you're stealing this image. It actually belongs to this person. Give them credit. Hadrian, who has been on the show, has also kind of made reference to that. And Chess Foxbear, he's gone to the point of actually watermarking all of his images. Like, and then kind of as he goes through, I don't think any of these individuals, including yourself, are looking for stolen images. You know, you're not policing Tumblr, quote unquote. But if you find them and you know the person, you're kind of like, hey, not cool. Like, this belongs to this person. Quit doing that shit.
Yeah. I browse Tumblr for – I listened to your guys' podcast like from 2 months ago where you're like, we don't use Tumblr to get off. We use like Stories and Axiom. I love Tumblr to get off. So it's a lot of my masturbatory material. And I'm going through it. And I'm like seeing like that's hot. They stole that photo, and then it completely ruins the mood for me because I get angry, especially when it's someone I like Ravenclaw Prefect Anthony, who I recently reblogged when the stolen photos from. He's a sweet guy. He's incredibly gorgeous, and so is Jacob, although I don't know him very well, so I can't speak about his personality, but he's just a super gorgeous guy. And I saw the photo, I'm like, people, you know, like the attention. That's and if you just take that away from them, it ruins the desire for them to post. And also, it's a gift that they're giving us. Like, you are giving me masturbatory material. Thank you. I get annoyed when other people are like, you're really hot, so I'm going to screw you over and not give you what you want from this. And I'm just like, why would you do that? And it makes me angry.
Yeah, I mean, it's simple to reblog, and it allows people to go back to that person's Tumblr page, where they can then follow them to get more material without having to wait for somebody to steal the images. And I don't see why they put this like link sometimes to kind of advertise their own. You know, you could just hit reblog and just put your link into the notes so people can still go back but still have attention to your own.
Well, but I think you bring up a good point. That's one thing that's new, I think, on mobile Tumblr that I really appreciate that they put into the programming is they finally got it. When you reblog, you can eliminate the other stuff that comes up. And the reason I like that is I use it only when someone is obviously advertising their own blog and it's not them in the picture. Do you know what I mean? So like they're obviously just using the image as bait, quote unquote, to get people to follow their blog. And that's, I guess that's fine. I find it like annoying, and it also speaks to an issue personally. Like if you have to do that, obviously you feel compelled that somehow you need a hole filled in your life that people are following your blog or whatever. That's just my personal opinion, obviously. So I think that that's interesting. But yeah, I agree. Leave like the thing I like is when you can follow it to the source. You know, that link is in there so you can go back and then, especially if you like the image and it happens to be a selfie, you would like to be able to go back and find said person and follow their blog because then you get more of that content. It's kind of the concept.
Yeah, and it's like quid pro quo if you keep that at least that initial link. So if there's a whole bunch of like other crap in there, you can take the other crap out but still keep that link to the original blog so that people can go back to the original blog to get theirs. And then it's like, hey, you're posting images that I think are pretty neat and cool, so I'm going to also follow you as well. So there's two follows right there. Right. So it shouldn't be just somebody has blogged this one image that you put on yours, which might have people follow your blog. And you might as well say, hey, thanks for giving me something to help people follow my blog. Here's a link to your blog. So that is kind of payment in right. some sense.
So with that being said, your Tumblr account actually has quite a bit of branches, so to speak. More than most that I see. You've got Ask Me Anything, which a lot of folks do. You also have a couple of different pieces. Now, what I'm thinking is these aren't separate blogs. These are more like tag groupings because you've got one called Pop Culture, another one called Ranty.
Those are separate blogs. I like having things compartmentalized. And so if someone just wants to like see me naked and not have to like learn anything about me, they can just follow, you know, Beverly Crusher. Someone wants to see, you know, like all the guys I find hot that I'm like, when I'm, you know, browsing Tumblr, I'm like, oh my God, he's gorgeous. They can follow my porn blog. If they want to, like, you know, see me reblog random pop culture things that make me laugh, they can follow that blog. So I like having it compartmentalized so people can just sort of get what they want. Partly just because I am usually pretty busy, and there's some people I really like, and I think they're awesome, and I think they're gorgeous, and they just post like 70 times a day, and I don't have time for that. And I was like, I have to unfollow you just because you post so much. And I don't have any time for anyone else. And so with my own blog, I've tried to sort of like branch it out so that people can follow what they want and then not follow what they don't want.
That makes sense. I think so for you, it's about categorizing things in your own personal life about who you're following and how you get to that information. But then it makes it easier for other folks as well. So because yeah. You've made reference in your blog and you already said it earlier about writing that you are working on a novel and that's a piece of who you are, but that's not like your main blog, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm. So my novel isn't even on Tumblr. But I definitely have a sort of erotica blog where I post erotica that I've written. And I enjoy erotica a lot. So
with the erotica, I'm going to kind of jump back to exhibitionism. You made reference to that you figured that out as a young age. So pretty much it sounds like you've been doing selfies since before that even term was coined.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not sure if it counts as a selfie when you're doing it with like a 320 by 240 video cam in the 1990s, but sure.
So what did you, what, like kind of how did that happen for you? Like, how did you discover the that part of you that you like, so to speak, showing off?
I came out at the age of 14, but I sort of – I lived more or less in the middle of nowhere, and I was extremely shy and socially anxious when I was younger. And I didn't really have that many friends, partly because I lived in the middle of nowhere, and so I couldn't really see anyone, and partly just because I was shy and socially anxious. So I made lots of friends with the over the internet, and – I made friends with a lot of older gay men that I found attractive. And this was me at the age of 15 drooling over usually like 30-year-old bears. Because at that age, I definitely like the older bear who is going to like call me son and abuse me and use me. But I was – because I was also extremely shy and socially anxious, I didn't really want to actually hook up with anyone. I wanted the sort of sexual attention in a safe way over the internet that I could then turn off and it would be done and I would not have to like freak out about actually meeting someone in person. So I sent a lot of photos to myself to people who appreciate it, and I really enjoyed that. And then later on, sort of like as I – got older and actually started getting over my social anxiety and was able to like meet guys and hook up, I realized that, you know, like, well, I enjoy hooking up, but I kind of actually enjoy the sharing the photos even more or just as much. It's really just sort of enjoyable experience to send it out there and know people appreciate it and then not necessarily have to deal with the sort of, there's a famous saying that you don't pay a sex worker to have sex with you, you pay them to go away afterwards. And in some ways, I think that's very true. I mean, hookups, you know, there's a lot of like, I've had several very bad hookups and, or even you're sort of have the hassle of trying to find someone when you're like, I'm horny now. Whereas exhibitionism, it's something I can just sort of be creative. I can have a lot of fun doing it. I'm one of those people who enjoys really laughing during sex and being ridiculous during sex. And, you know, one second I'm like intensely fucking someone, the next second I'm just like goofing off and being a ridiculous asshole because that's who I am. Being an exhibitionist lets me just sort of do that, be free and be creative and have fun doing it. And I enjoy it just as much as sex. So I suppose that's most of it, and that's where it comes from me, and just how much I enjoy it and how much I enjoy the sort of knowing that people appreciate it and that are getting off to me.
So I'm curious about something. How do you get how do you get the initial spark, I guess, of creativity to want to do some of the image sets that you've done? Like, and morally, I mean, they're all fun to look at. That's definitely a part of what your personality is. Like, I was looking and I remember the one where you did like a Doctor Who kind of series, which was fun. But the ones that kind of intrigue me more are the ones where you're being more public or open, which the one that specifically comes to mind is the one when you were in the woods, which I don't know how much of those you've done per se that aren't at home.
I've been naked in the woods a lot. I've met several friends with benefits and we're like, hey, let's meet up. We'll go for a walk in the woods. I love hiking. There's a huge park near my house called Gatineau Park. And often we'll end up hiking and we'll end up chatting. We realize we're both really hot and we both really like each other. And, oh, hey, this is a pretty secluded section of the woods. And then suddenly we're having sex. And that happens, at least a couple of times a year where I'm just meeting someone new and end up having sex in the woods. Like right now I have six fuck buddies who I see on a pretty regular basis. And of those, I've had sex in the woods with four of them. For three of those four people, we met and went for a hike in the woods, just sort of didn't know each other, and then ended up having sex when we met each other because we're horny bears. So it happens pretty frequently to me, just because I like hiking, I like nature, I like just doing random stuff and hanging out with people, and I'm also a horny bastard who likes fucking. So.
So it's not something that's intentionally set up. Like, you don't think it's ahead to yourself and be like, oh, I'm going to go for a hike. I'm going to go here. You know, I'll just drop trow at a specific point. It's more kind of impulsive to the moment.
Usually. Yeah. When I in that European photo set, I was just sort of like, I was hiking. I realized, hey, you know what? I'm hiking. I haven't seen anyone in like 15 minutes. This is a pretty secluded spot. I could probably rub one out here. And then I did. I wasn't really planning on it because I didn't even think I'd have a chance because it's the, that actual, it's a, I don't, I'm probably going to pronounce it horribly. It's a De Jure Garden. That was horrible pronunciation. But it's quite central to Stockholm. I was walking from, you can walk from where I was to downtown in like 30 minutes. So I thought it would be quite a lot busier and I wasn't planning on, you know, doing a photo set and rubbing one out. But there you go.
So when you went to San Francisco this year, I believe. Is that where some of the other photo set came from?
No. Tiri Tiri Matangi was in New Zealand. It's a New Zealand nature reserve. I'm not sure if you're familiar with New Zealand, but they have a lot of indigenous flora and fauna that all the European settlers came and like, well, this is different from Britain. It'll all have to go. And so they tried to get rid of a lot of the native flora and fauna and plant their own trees. And so a lot of the big tall trees in New Zealand are pines that were imported from Europe because the settlers thought it looked too different. Because native New Zealand trees are gorgeous and weird and everything like that. So right now in New Zealand, they have a bunch of island preserves where they try to preserve the actual original habitat of New Zealand, and where, you know, all the sort of stoats and cats can't get to because stoats and cats just kill the native fauna of New Zealand because they're not used to actual land predators. So I was on this island with my friend Aaron, Wanderlust Bear, slash Wanderlust Cub, slash Wanderlust Cubs, depending on where he is. And we were there. We found this one secluded area. We were both meeting each other for the first time. And we were both horny and finding each other hot and really liking each other. And so we ended up having sex. And he had his camera and photos were taken. So that's more or less how it goes most of the time.
You're horny. I'm horny. There is no one around.
He's horny, and everybody.
Let's take pictures thinking, and like, have sex.
Well, everybody's probably like, "How do I meet Daniel?" Like,
okay, I gotta remember meet Daniel in the back alley behind the chain drive. That's
nice.
Interesting. Thinking locally.
So also you have other things that you're into. I'm curious about something. How did leather come into your life?
I've always been pretty kinky. I've been in two MS relationships before. One as a slave, one as a master. And I recently was in a non-kinky relationship for quite a while. And I realized that I definitely need to be in a BDSM relationship. I don't really do vanilla relationships, which is sad because the guy was actually pretty much one of the best people I've ever met. But I couldn't do a vanilla relationship. I've always been interested in kink. I remember like reading erotica at the age of like 14, 15 of all these sort of kinks that I realized, yep, that's really hot. And I struggled with it for a while because I struggled with sort of the weirdness of it. I had a very, you know, even though I'm not actually Catholic or Jewish, I had a sort of like that sort of Catholic guilt in on me about a lot of the weird sexual things I was into, about the fact that I liked big chubby guys and all that sort of stuff. And so I suppressed a lot of it until when I was really socially anxious and just sort of read kinky erotica. But kink has been a part of my life for pretty much since puberty. I know people who say that they were like 4 years old and saw someone get tied off in television. They're like, oh my God, that's hot. Or, well, probably not hot, but like, there's like, I want that. And that wasn't me. It's sort of like hit with puberty that I'm definitely kinky. Yeah.
With that being said, you said that you've been from the, if I recall correctly, a slave, and you've been a master. How did that how did that transition take place for you?
It was pretty natural. When I was my first BDSM relationship was as a slave to my old master. He was doing his PhD, and so I knew going into it that it was going to last about a year, and then he was going to move away when he finished his PhD, and because he had gotten a job in Belgium actually, and so I got into it sort of. We originally were supposed to mostly be play partners, but then we ended up falling in love with each other, and I just wanted to serve him with everything I could. And so I just sort of got into it looking for basically a kinky fuck buddy and ended up falling in love with him, which is how several of my relationships have started. where I meet someone because I think they're hot and then I end up fucking them a lot and falling in love with them. But the transition from that after our relationship ended because he moved away to Belgium, for some reason, like I'd always had, you know, what my friends like to call daddy issues, where I would go after like bears in their 30s or early 40s and date people who are like twice my age. And then suddenly I was finding like younger guys attractive, and it was really weird at first because I didn't know how to react to that. I'm like, this guy's only 20. I find him really hot. What the fuck is going on? And it was also really difficult for a while because most of the guys who were very submissive and 20 years old wanted someone in their like mid to late 30s and not someone who is like 23. but I ended up falling in love with another an actual older slave and who is doing his master's. This is, you know, academia. People come around and then you meet them and end up fucking and falling in love. And it just, it felt really natural. My old master had trained me really well by sort of like doing all the training. And I sort of learned what I liked and what I didn't. And I'm lucky enough that as a dom or as a sub, I like the same things. I just like either doing them or having them done to me. So it was really natural. And I knew exactly what he was feeling because I had felt it myself. And so I know what effects certain things had. And so when I'm flogging him, I know I can read his facial expressions. Okay, this is where I was. His facial expressions are here. So I can see like where he is along the scale because I've been there. So this transition from being like full on sub to a full on dom came quite naturally. And I didn't really feel weird about it at all.
Cool. With the involvement that you've had with leather, what do you think is kind of the biggest misconception people have about leather and BDSM and kink?
The biggest misconception, in Canada, it's actually not that published. I mean, there's about a month ago, there was a big controversy in Canada because a famous radio star, Gian Gomeshi, it's fairly certain he abused many women, and he tried to claim that, oh no, there are people who are saying this is abuse. It's not. It's just consensual BDSM, and you may think, you know, the BDSM is weird, but you just have to accept it and know this was consensual. And no one in Canada is talking about the BDSM because we all say, well, it's kind of irrelevant whether it's in BDSM or not. The question is, did they consent? And the answer is no, they did not consent. And in Canada, it's not really an issue. So in terms of, I'd say in terms of like the stuff I've heard though, there is often a misconception that, you know, like doms are selfish and subs are weak. And I've heard that sort of like, you know, people look at subs and be like, oh, you just want to serve. That means you're weak-willed. And having been a sub, subbing is really hard. It's not just like, yes, I just get to obey this person and not have to question it. And you know, how well does that work with your parents when they tell you to do things? It's very difficult actually being trained and sort of trying to work yourself deeper into subspace. So that is what you want. You want to serve. That takes a lot of willpower, and takes a lot of willpower to be broken and to want to be broken, because of course, you know, the sub has most of the power in any sort of scene, because the sub can say stop at any time. So the dom is always working in the confines of the sub and where the sub feels comfortable. And while certainly, you know, there is room for sort of no way out and loss of safe words, usually that's only in very long-term established relationships. And in short terms, it's especially, and even in long terms, when you get rid of safe words, it's usually in a sense of where the dom knows the limits of the subs and will push them slowly and surely, but not actually always make sure that the sub is in a good place and always ensure that the sub is actually enjoying himself. And so the sub definitely has the power in any sort of BDSM scene. And so when a sub is being whipped or flogged or spanked and they're taking it and asking for more, that requires a lot of strength. And as a dom, it's now in terms of to flip it over to go from the sub being weak-willed, which is definitely not true, the dom being selfish. Part of the reason why I really love being a dom is I love the act of sort of nurturing my sub, of caring for, of encouraging and training. And it makes me feel a much more intense love than any vanilla thing could. And I'm, as a dom, I'm always looking out for my pup, is my usual term nowadays, is will and what they're, what will make them happy. And so, yes, I mean, my pup, I want my pup to serve me, but I want my, most importantly, I want to make my pup happy to serve me. I want serving me to make my pup happier than he's ever been before. And so it is definitely, it is, I'm always thinking of my pup's happiness and what will make him happy and how to get and how to make him serving me be happy. And I, that was a poorly phrased sentence, the last one, but I think you understand. I'm going to stop talking now.
That's fine. So you made reference to referring to your sub as a pup, but you've also posted pictures on Tumblr, a series in reference to pup play. How did that come about for you? Like pup play as a activity, as well as the idea of doing that image series?
Well, actually, pup play I came to slowly, and I think there's five main reasons why people go into pup play that all sort of are varying. But for me, it was definitely about actually sort of getting into a different narrative. I had always been in BDSM relationships, master slave, and even though that was hot, I never really felt that it kind of captured the narrative of me in a relationship. Even though in both my relationships, I did end up giving up consent and saying, like, I no longer have a safe word. You can do whatever you want to me, or vice versa. It was definitely in the context of a very loving relationship, and master slave doesn't have that context. Slave, I mean, historically laden. I mean, hearing slave still makes me think of Uncle Tom's Cabin, if you're a huge nerd like me. If you're not a huge nerd, it definitely, makes you think of slavery, which was awful and horrible. And the politics of, a white person calling himself or someone else a slave was always something that was on my mind. But also just the narrative of, a slave as someone who is not cared for really, and who is abused in a way that is not consensual, was definitely not something that I think was part of the narrative that I enjoyed. It was the lingo that was out there. There's either Sir Boy, which is very good for a sort of, for a short term thing I found, but for a long term, it doesn't have the emotional oomph, I find, and it sort of, it doesn't make my heart swell, and it doesn't make my dick hard, which are the two most important things, whereas master does. So slave, I house all these problems, but pup, I think, has a built-in narrative that is very different. Whereas, the master of a pup is not someone who doesn't care about the pup. He wants the pup because he wants to love the pup, but also has to train the pup, has to make the pup obedient. And so I think it definitely captures what I like about BDSM a lot more, in that sense of this narrative of a loving master who is nevertheless dominating and owning and training the pup. And so that's really what got me into pup play. There's a lot of also other aspects of pup play I really like. I like a lot of the poses. As you can see in my photo set, I do a lot of pup play poses, which I think are fucking hot. I think that just sort of like holding the leash and wanting to be owned and used and just sort of like looking up with those begging eyes, I find begging incredibly hot. And so like when my pup comes up to me on all fours and is begging for my load, that will always get me hard. And so I really like a lot of those aspects of it. In terms of the – I'm not so much into the pet play aspect where you're actually becoming a dog. And I have friends who are very into this who have the hoods and the tails, and they really like the aspect of becoming a dog. Most of them are also furries, so it sort of taps into it like that. And so they really enjoy that aspect of being a dog, and not even in necessarily in a sexual way, although their tails are still butt plugs. So, I mean, it is sexual, but it's not as sexual for, it's just more about the fact of there being a dog. And they talk about being in pup space a lot, which is that sort of that headspace where you almost forget you're human, where you just sort of become one with the fact that you are being a dog. I think these other parts of, pup play that are very, that really sort of call out to me, that make me really like it, is the fact that the narrative of pup play is a little bit more of a compressed hierarchy. And this is a big generational difference. If you look at most of the kink communities I've been involved in, pup play is dominated by young people. I mean, you hardly ever see anyone over the age of 40 in pup play. I mean, Ottawa, we have a couple people who are over the age of 40 who are into it, but it's very much a sort of a young person thing. And I think that's because a lot of the old guard in BDSM, and I'm making some crass generalizations here. Of course, this is not always true, and there's a lot of variation. But a lot of the old guard in BDSM really like that sort of that strict hierarchy where the sub is not talked to. If you want to talk to the sub, you have to get permission of the master first. You have these long lists of protocol. A friend of mine who really likes protocol recently got into a relationship with a sort of old guard BDSMer and was given about like a 30-page book of, you know, here's the protocol you will always follow. Whereas pup play is much more free. It's much more creative. It's usually in pup play, there is no protocol. Sort of as long as you are acting in a way that is always showing worship and, you know, love and devotion to your master, it's good. And there is no protocol. You do what feels right in the situation. And that's sort of like that sort of freewheeling energy and creativity of being a pup, of that sort of freedom. And so there's that difference too, and that really appeals to me because I like to see myself as a sort of creative, freewheeling, act of chaos. And while that certainly is a bit of a exaggeration, it's also true that that's what I enjoy, and that's why pup play appeals to me that way. And so I think those are some of the main reasons. There's also, I think, a bit of a humiliation factor, sort of like calling your pup or calling your sub a pup, and that they are not, in some ways, not human. And if for people who are into humiliation, that's also a thing. But I think those are many of the main reasons.
Well, that makes sense. So when it comes to, I find it interesting that you describe yourself sort of in a way with active chaos. To me, that speaks to something else, which I'm curious about, which is gaming. The one photo series that we made reference to was, I think it's Magic the Gathering, was the card game. I take it that you enjoy gaming overall, like in different genres and styles, because I do believe somewhere on your Tumblr I did see a picture of you holding a handheld console when you were going to be playing, and but you notably had other things going on at the same time.
Yeah. No, I love gaming. I love video games. I love board games. I have over 100 board games. And I also have many, many video games. I'm just sort of looking at my video game collection there, and it's quite large. But I do have, here's the photo set. I'm going to link this here so you can add into the podcast if you want. Gaming is a huge part of my life. I really enjoy it. It's my main way to relax. Sort of, if I've had a stressful day, the first thing I do is I come home, I want to play my video games. In part because I was so shy for a long period of time. Even though I love seeing people, I love interacting with people, it takes a lot of energy. And so I very much enjoy the sort of like getting home, playing Space Channel 5, which is my usual sort of like I'm stressed out and need to calm down game. Which, because I am a huge gay nerd, and I love Space Channel 5 so much. I had people who didn't really believe I was gay until they saw me play Space Channel 5, and they're like, oh, you really are gay. I'm like, yes, yes, I am.
Okay, so for the non-gamer like me, can you explain what that means, that people had to see you play that to see that you were gay?
Okay, well, for a person who doesn't know Space Channel 5, it is a video game where you play a space reporter named Ulala who has to dance to defeat robots or Morolians who are abducting people, and you have to free them by dancing. And so it is a quite ridiculous game, and I will usually dance along while playing it. So... yeah,
that is very gay.
It is extremely gay.
Okay, I guess I understand it now. I'm like, how does a game make you gay? Like the only thing that came to mind was like, what are you like the whole point is to go around and sleep with as many men as possible? Like,
it is more gay than that. If there was a sleeping around with many, you know, like as many gay guys as you could, this would be more gay. It's that gay. I'll link a video of my favorite boss battle in Space Channel 5, which is Ulala versus Evila, and you can just imagine me dancing along to it. Because I always do dance along to it. I don't like just playing it. I find sitting around just playing it is kind of boring. So I will be there dancing along with movements. And it's basically like a Simon Says, where you have to remember a long series of movements and then recreate them. And I'm always dancing along to it because I am very gay.
Interesting. So I would say, because there's another aspect of your life that we're aware of from your pictures, and that is that you have really good balance physically and muscle control, because you play rugby.
I do. I love rugby.
So how did that come about for you? And I ask because rugby is not as popular here in the States, although I think it should be. I think some of the bear community is aware of rugby only because they think the men that play rugby are fucking hot.
They all love our tight ends.
That's American football. There's no tight ends in rugby.
Oh, they're all loose? Sorry.
They are.
Couldn't help it. You were saying, Daniel, sorry.
Ah, I was just saying, yeah, most rugby players I've slept with are a bit loose, so yes.
Oh, my. So how – anyways, back to the rugby thing, now that everybody's fapping and thinking about rugby. how did you discover rugby? Or is it just kind of a – this is going to show how American-centric I am. Is it innate for Canadians to know about rugby and want to play it?
It's not innate. In Canada, rugby is more popular than it is in the States. In the World Cup of Rugby, Canada almost always beats the U.S., but we're not still all that great. We get crushed by New Zealand, which has 1/10 their population. And so, you know, it's not a huge thing in Canada, but it's certainly bigger than it is in the States. I played rugby in high school. That's originally how I got into rugby. Is I played in high school. I'm like, oh, this is really fun. I went for the high school team and then found out that the coach is a homophobic jackass. And after he found out, not only was I gay, but I was also teaching sex ed behind his back, because he was also the sex ed teacher, because we make phys ed do sex ed, because that makes sense. And even though it was a public school where he was definitely not allowed to do this, he was definitely pushing abstinence only. And if you have gay sex, you will get AIDS and die.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, and so by this point, of course, I, being a huge nerd, was all over the internet and actually learning what was what, and a whole bunch of other people in the class, knowing me for the sort of nerd who is always on the internet or in a book, asked me, you know, like, okay, so, you know, like, what is actually going on. Like, you know, why is – some people just were curious. I was out at this time to everyone pretty much except for him. And they asked me, like, well, why is gay sex so risky that he's saying he get AIDS? And I was like, well, you know, a lot of straight people use condoms when gay people didn't, because straight people could get pregnant. And gay people are like, we can't get pregnant. We don't need condoms. And then AIDS came on. And also just that, you know, the ass tears a little bit more easily than the vagina. And so it's a little bit more risky that way too. And then they're like, oh, that makes sense. I'm like, yep. And then, of course, this got back to the coach, and he's like, well, you're not only gay, but going behind my back in teaching sex ed. So I was kicked off the team. And if I could go back, I would definitely have fought it, because that would be highly illegal in Canada. I definitely could get that guy fired. But at the time, I was very shy and socially awkward and still sort of had some residual gay self-hating. So I didn't really fight it. And then about 10 years later, I found actually a guy on Bear 411 tried to hook up with me. And as his opening line, he's like, I play on the gay rugby team, which was actually a complete lie. He never showed up to any practice. He never played any games. He just signed up for the mailing list and then used it as a hookup line. the hookup line kind of failed on me, because I didn't want to hook up with them. I wanted to hear, like, what? There's gay rugby? Because I'd sort of fallen out of sports and just, you know, exercised on my own and hadn't really played any sports since high school. So I found out, like, there is actually a gay rugby team that's starting up. I was the first person to ever show up to a practice because it was literally just starting up when I joined and found out about it. And so I helped found the team. I was on the board for many years. The past 2 years, I was on the board for 5 years. I'm not on the board anymore, which actually allows me to just focus on playing, which is really nice. So I played rugby, and this was my seventh full season playing rugby. I really enjoy it. It's super fun. There's things I like about rugby is there's a position for everyone. We have like tiny little boys on our team who are like 110 pounds soaking wet and extremely flamboyant. And then they get the ball and they're just like, you just watch them run. You're like, holy shit, you're fast. And then there's the big fat guys like me who I get the ball and I just smash through people. I'm just sort of like a big sledgehammer. And there's, of course, every other body type that is, you know, everyone has their own little job. But at the same time, the thing I really like about rugby that makes it so much better than American football for me is that in American football, everyone has their sort of defined role. Like, this is your position. This is what you do. In rugby, that lasts for about 10 seconds. You have something, your position is what you do for 10 seconds, and then chaos. And then you have to do whatever is in front of you. And if I have to like outrun the little tiny skinny guy, that's what I have to do. And you're always playing to your strengths. You're always just sort of doing everything that needs doing, and just always adapting and sort of observing and coming up with new strategies on the fly. And that's what makes it really exciting to me. And that's why I really love it.
Well, that's cool. So I thought it was funny you said you have positions, but that lasts for 10 seconds and then it just kind of goes to hell on the field and everybody does whatever to score, so to speak, which I just realized how sexual that sounds. But anyways, so
I don't see the problem with this.
I totally agree, Jeff. I don't see any problem at all with it. So have you found a crossover between rugby and being gay? And by that I mean the sexuality, like the sex aspect, not about being on gay rugby. Because I ask that because I think a lot of guys fetishize that or find it as a kink. Like they think that rugby players are hot. They love seeing pictures of them. They think it's a very masculine, manly sport. So they make presumptions about men who play rugby in the bedroom, quote unquote. Have you had any experiences with that?
Not really. I haven't really been fetishized for playing rugby. When I post photos on Tumblr, you know, a shirtless selfie will get like, you know, 100 notes, and then I post rugby photos and they get like 30. So I find that, you know, I haven't really found that people fetishize their whole rugby thing. If people sometimes will, I've had occasionally people who fetishize me and like, oh, you play rugby. That means you're all straight acting. And then I link them to one of my YouTube videos of me singing show tunes. And then they usually never message me again. Cause I like to think of myself as having a lot of, you know, traditional masculine values where I value strength. I like, you know, that sort of rough physical challenge of rugby. I like being strong. I like, you know, powerlifting and playing rugby. But I also very much embrace my feminine and very flamey side, which I think is actually quite apparent in my voice. I have a very gay voice, I think. And I sing very gay songs. So I have encountered that a little bit, but not really in any, I think not really any much more than anyone else who looks like me, who has that sort of big, muscular, yet also chubby look, and who will encounter people who will sort of fetishize them for being like straight acting and not like all those gays who are all like flamey and feminine. And I have other friends who I go to the gym with who powerlift with me and who also experienced a lot of that. So I think I experienced more of that from my body type rather than from the fact that I play rugby. And I mostly just link them to my YouTube videos or show tunes and then they go away.
So wait, is that intentional? The linking them to the other aspects of your life?
It's usually intentional that if someone is saying I seem really hot because I seem very straight acting, I don't want to say always, because I have met people who just, you know, they use those phrases, and I think that those are silly phrases and like, okay, well, that's just what you find hot. There's a lot of people who, when they see the fact that I am not their sort of fetishized straight guy who also has gay sex stereotype, and I enjoy show tunes and I'm very flamboyant, they lose interest very quickly and have no interest in me as a person or as a sex object. And so that's very intentional. It's just a way of sort of like filtering out the people who see me as their sort of like straight boy sex object and are not interested in the fact that I'm a little bit flamey at times.
Interesting. So you seem well versed on a lot of different areas, one of them being that you've traveled. You made reference to being over in Europe and then just this year going to New Zealand. Is that something that you want to do? Like you try to plan a trip a year, or is that something that kind of came from your growing up? And I asked that question because for me, I spent every year in the summer, we traveled, my parents and I, to go to a convention, but the convention moved around the country, so to speak, mostly on the East Coast. So I got an opportunity as a kid to kind of see different landscapes, different communities in that thing. So I think that relates now to my adult life, where I do spend time going to different places and having friends in various areas.
I came rather late to traveling. I did not travel as a child. My parents are very, while, you know, certainly well-meaning, they are very, very much homebodies, whose idea of like extensive social interaction is about 10 minutes with someone. And then they're like, well, that's enough social interaction for the next 2 months. And so pretty much all of my time was spent at home in this sort of like very rural place on the internet. And when after I sort of went to university and started making money, I still didn't really travel all that much because I didn't really see what was enjoyable about it. And so it was only actually really 2 years ago that I started getting the travel bug. And since because I – 2 years ago, I actually started because I was going to Manchester to play rugby. And I just like, well, you know, if I'm flying all the way out to Manchester, I might as well go see all these other cities. And I traveled a little bit before that. Like in 2010, I went to Minneapolis in the States, which I suppose I don't need to see in the States because most of you people listening are American. And I just sort of, I didn't really know what to do when traveling. I sort of wandered around Minneapolis and just sort of like walked around. I'm like, well, this is kind of boring. And so when I went to Manchester, I decided, okay, I'm going to do a whole bunch of different cities so I can get a taste and try to do like 2 or 3 days in each city and do just this big circuit. I went Amsterdam, Glasgow, Manchester, Liverpool, Cardiff, London, and then Paris. and spend like 2 or 3 days in each city and come up with sort of an itinerary for each city of like, these are things I think I would be interested in. And that's when I started to really enjoy traveling and realize, hey, this is actually really fun, and learn exactly what I like about it, which is usually I love doing nature walks. I love seeing sort of, I love doing hiking in different countries, seeing what the actual landscape is like and just experiencing nature. And then I often like coming home and hooking up. It's like, well, you know, it's starting to get dark. It's like 8 o'clock. What am I going to do until I go to bed at midnight? And it's like, well, let's go on Growler. And well, you know, I don't actually hook up quite as much as I like to say, I'm saying I do. I mean, in Cardiff, actually, when I was in Cardiff, I met this really cute bear and cub. I was actually trying to find a laundromat because I'm like, it was about midway through my trip. I need to do laundry. And I realized there are no laundromats in Cardiff. Everyone just has laundry in their buildings. So there's no laundromats. And so these two people, took me in, and then we were doing the, they're like, well, we'll do your laundry. And then my laundry was in, and we're like, well, now we have like, you know, 3 hours to kill while the laundry is being done. What do you want to do? And then we started playing video games, and then rapidly turned into a threesome.
This totally sounds like a porn plot. Traveling abroad, I need to do laundry. There's no laundromats. What will I do? And then, you know, spidink, you get a message. We have a laundromat. Winky face.
There are photos of that night. So, I mean, you know, you can look at the photos and imagine the plot in your head.
Nice. Very fun. So you were successful in not only getting like the laundry done, but then having fun and continuing on your journey then.
It was that was one of my most memorable nights of the trip. And then sadly, when I was in London, I got very sick, and I was invited to this very excellent foursome with three very hot guys. And I was actually there in a bed beside them sleeping through it because I was so sick. I'm like, I can't take part. I'm really sorry. And then I just like try to slap the light on my eyes, like, oh, the fuck, they're all hot. I wish I wasn't sick.
Wow. That's interesting to me, the dedication that you put in to actually go and try to have fun. And then you're like, no, I just can't.
Well, two of the guys as part of that threesome were also my roommates for London. So it wasn't just, cause in London I was sharing a hotel with this, very cute, bear couple from, Washington, DC. And we arranged the foursome with this really hot London transit worker who we saw and were chatting with when we were like trying to navigate the London underground. Then later on went on Growler and like, hey, it's him. He's hot. And we messaged him, started up the foursome, and then I got sick. It was tragic. It's one of my big regrets of my life.
So has there been any, I'm now morbidly curious about this and I apologize, has there been any thought about trying to recreate that or make that happen again, like to go travel and get that group together?
Not recently. I have hooked up with that guy, several of those guys before. So last year, I went down to Washington, D.C. and stayed with them and played rugby with them and ended up sleeping with each of them individually, as well as two other boys. And we were all staying in their house. And so it was a very sex-filled house where you're having sex like 6 times a day and then playing rugby. And so it wasn't quite, you know, with the London transit worker, but it was a very enjoyable week that I spent with them.
Must have been rough, 6 times a day.
Well,
I'm thinking people would be sore.
Not all of it is like, you know, like fucking. There was a lot of just sort of like, you know, light oral, a lot of let's cuddle and make out and jack off. So, you know, it wasn't all, I mean, 6 times a day fucking would definitely be a lot. So it wasn't all that. There's various intensities of sex. And sometimes you just want to make out and jack off together. And sometimes you want to fuck. And, you know, depending on how often you're having sex, usually the slider of where you want to go, stays the same. So, you know, I like to say that, you know, total sex remains constant. You can either have a lot of very less intense sex over, you know, like a long period of time, just like constantly this sort of like low level sex, or if you let it build up for a while and then you have some like really ridiculously kinky over the top fucking session that lasts for like 3 hours and leaves you completely wiped for the weekend. So total sex remains constant.
So we got our sex specialist here.
I was going to say, it's still sounding like the plot of a porn, but, you know, that works.
Tony, get on that.
Yeah, well, if Tony's listening, which he should be, he's probably jotting notes. He's like, okay, traveling abroad, laundromat, nonstop sex.
If you're ever in Cardiff, ask for Ian. He has the best laundromat.
That he can shut down to have a porn in the laundromat? That would be awesome.
And he is, let me tell you, his mouth is extremely talented and his ass is very tasty. So,
wow. That kind of left me speechless for a moment. anyways. We'll think about that later some more. I have another question for you, but you don't have to really get into discussion about it if you don't want to, because you referenced on your Tumblr account not discussing it much. And but I'm intrigued by it. You're vegan?
I am. I've been vegan for 11 years.
Wow.
That's how I stay so skinny. When you look at my photos, you're like, damn, he's skinny. How does he stay that skinny? It's because I'm vegan.
Well, okay, skinny is a relative term here.
Yeah, I was just going to say, time out. Let's talk about this.
Back up.
Pictures of you posted at the beginning of your Tumblr account 5 years ago what are pictures of you prior to starting your Tumblr account, and you were skinny. You were very much a thin young man.
Yeah, then I decided that I was sick of being a chaser and wanted to be a big bear. And then I became one.
See, kids, you can achieve anything you want in life.
Being a vegan.
So, yeah, here's the reason why I bring up the subject. I spent 1 year being vegetarian, and in that year, I gained 20 pounds. And my father, to this day, still thinks it's the strangest thing that ever happened in my life, is that by going vegetarian, I gained weight. He was like, how does that work? He's like, most people think of vegetarians as like, you know, wafy thin, always miserable, cranky individuals, you know, who are, you know, radical or antagonistic or whatever. And the reality is that I ate a lot of carbs during the course of that year, not necessarily a gazillion tons of vegetables. So, and so you bring up a point about your body size, but being vegan, I find that intriguing because vegan, for those that aren't aware, is, I think, a much more restrictive portion of being vegetarian, because you don't have any, if I recall correctly, and you might define it a little differently, Daniel, is that it's no meat, it's no animal products of any sort.
That's right. I don't even use honey. I try to avoid regular granulated sugar because it generally uses charred bone, at least in Canada. You know, and stuff like marshmallows contains animal bone as well. Animal bone is in a surprisingly number of things.
Gelatin.
Yep.
Correct. I was going to say the animal bone's probably throwing people off, but we typically refer to it as a gelatin. Interesting. So what brought you around to deciding to be a vegan?
Okay. Let's try to make this not go on for 10 minutes.
I'm just wondering, did you kind of have an epiphany moment, or was it gradual? You were kind of like, man, I'm going to stop doing this, and I'm stopping. And then you just one day was kind of like, well, I guess I've cut out so many things, I'm just going to be vegan.
I started as a vegetarian 15 years ago. I started as a I didn't really have an epiphany moment. It's something I've been playing around with for a while. Actually, I wouldn't have had an epiphany moment because the reasons I'm vegan today are very different from the reasons I turned vegetarian 16 years ago. I look at the reasons I turned vegetarian 16 years ago and think, well, that was stupid. And because when I went vegetarian, I did it from a very sort of simple ethical standpoint of feelings are what give things ethical value. Sort of like a computer without feelings doesn't have ethical value, but an animal with feelings does. And therefore, since animals have ethical value, killing an animal is wrong. Therefore, I shouldn't kill animals. Therefore, I've become vegetarian. And that's basically the reasoning that I used as a 16-year-old when I was really dumb. Of course, I think that is really dumb because that's not how nature works. Killing is a part of nature, and humans are there, eat animals, and that is necessarily a part of nature. And it's not a bad thing. I mean, there's the famous experiment of you put deer on an island without wolves, and they eat all the food, and then they all starve. And so stuff like that certainly indicates that the biosphere is in this, if you allow me to use sort of the gayanology talk, is a self-regulating system. And the more diversity and the more interactions between eating, the more secure the biosphere is, and the more it'll actually be able to survive any shocks. And when you reduce that biodiversity and when you reduce the amount of things eating other animals, you actually are making the biosphere less resistant to shock. But still, then modern farming techniques actually are reducing the biosphere's ability to survive shocks because we're doing things like breeding the immune system out of bees, and making breeding animals to be more docile and more subservient. So we had to actually. So in some ways, in terms of cows, cows are now completely domesticated. There are no aurochs left, which are things that could actually survive in the wild. Cows are a domesticated form of auroch. And now they are completely subservient. In terms of stuff like fish, we're actually making fish develop go through puberty sooner than they are originally doing, and develop to be smaller because our nets are designed to sort of say, oh, this fish is too small, it's too young, we'll leave it in the water. And so fish are now becoming smaller in order to basically survive in that because you have an evolutionary advantage by being smaller and going through puberty earlier because then you're going to reproduce earlier. And this is also having other deleterious effects on these fish because, of course, they are now actually – you're prioritizing – or prioritizing the wrong word. But natural selection is – or artificial selection this way in this case is now making fish smaller and prioritizing different things. And I think that is – very, very bad for the biodiversity of the planet, and I think that's very bad. In terms of ethically making animals subservient upon humans to exist, so like most chickens are unable to stand up once they reach adulthood now because that's more efficient for farming. And I look at that and think that's really bad. If what we want to do is you want to have a self-regulating biosphere, that is extremely bad for that because it is an animal that literally can't stand up and needs human intervention to survive. And cows are the same way, and we're doing that. And I find that more and more of the biomass turns into this, into something that basically only exists to be able to serve humans. I think that's very bad. And that was a very lame conclusion. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I think you well stated your case that you feel that we as a grouping, humans, are massively modifying the world and other species to that point.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to come off as one of those anti-GMO people. I think GMOs definitely have a good purpose in reducing the amount of pesticides in the world so that, you know, nature can survive better, as well as being able to feed people who would not otherwise be able to get all the nutritional things they need, and as well as driving down food prices, which helps people in poverty. And so I think there's a lot of good things about GMO, but I think when we're sort of not even just like for those purposes, but just for the convenience purposes of being able to like sort of breed these animals to be completely dependent upon us so we can harvest them, that's bad.
Interesting. So I'm imagining over that time frame of the – well, 15 and then 10 years of being vegan, you've figured for yourself what works as a good base diet and where you can go like for go out to eat, so to speak. How does that play when you go and you travel? Do you find that to be a challenge in any particular areas?
Not usually. Well, I will usually bring a lot of protein powder with me to travel because it's really easy to get vegan carbs and vegetables. It's much more difficult to get vegan protein. And so I will usually bring a lot of protein powder along with me. It's like, well, I'll have this salad and, you know, a side of bread. And here's my protein powder for the protein that goes with my complete meal. And so I find that helps a lot. And so whenever I'm packing, it's usually like a big jar of protein powder that goes along with me. The only time I really had difficulty being vegan in my travels was when I went to the American South. The American South does not really understand the concept of, you know, no dairy and no meat.
Yeah. Well, that's why I asked, because I'm like, Americans are not exactly in most areas up to date on that. Like the West Coast can probably handle it pretty well, and major metropolitan areas of the East or the South probably have some like decent locations, being restaurants and or stores that you can go to. But outside of that, I would imagine it would be a challenge.
I've done a lot of sort of traveling across the U.S. and in most places other than the American South, it hasn't really been an issue. And even if people don't really understand it, they're like, whoa, you want, you know, like no dairy? I'm like, yep. And so just like, don't put cheese in my salad. They're like, okay. Whereas you go to the American South and you say, don't put cheese in my salad, they give you like just, you know, macaroni and mayonnaise. And I'm like, well, there's egg in the mayonnaise. I thought I meant like lettuce.
Don't you have a nice vinaigrette or something?
Well, I was going to say, you can't really eat greens in the South because infamously they use ham hocks or pork or something to cook with the greens.
Well, that's if along you, with you get cooked greens.
Yeah, that's true.
You can get greens in major metropolitan areas in the South.
Vegan greens, you mean?
Well, no, I just mean greens in general. Well, you go to rural South and sort of like, you know, the only thing green on the menu, it might be like green eggs and ham. That was a really lame joke. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I was like, Dr. Seuss is from the South? Anyways. But yeah, no, that's interesting. So I don't know. You give me confidence to know that a person can be I don't know how else I want to say this.
A bear and vegan?
Yes. A beautifully shaped bear and vegan at the same time.
You can keep your beautiful curves and hairy belly and still be vegan.
Correct. In fact, I got my curves being vegan. Well, I was a little bit curvy. I became vegan. I got skinny and then I got fat. So
your body adjusted.
Mm-hmm. And my buddy Justin also, I'm like, I'm tired of being a chaser.
Did you identify as a chaser when you were thinner?
I did. Especially when I was much more submissive. I like the idea of sort of like identifying as a chaser and like going after those, you know, big chubby bears who are going to put me in my place. My really desire to become a big bear sort of came around when I was sort of becoming a dom, and I think part of me sort of like equates that sort of like size with power, and especially because I like sort of guys who are both fat and muscular, and as becoming a dom, I wanted to have that sort of like feeling of looking into my mirror and thinking, damn, I'm hot, I'm powerful. And so that's what I went for. That's why I do things like power lift and eat gargantuan amounts of food, as well as I really like sort of smashing through people on the rugby pitch. That's also fun. Mm-hmm.
So your physical shape gives you that ability to kind of, I guess, put people away is what I'm trying to say.
Well, like when I was in San Francisco, I was hanging out with Tank, Branded Bull Tank on Tumblr. And he's a big guy, and he was sort of like, oh, yeah, we're both big, strong guys. And then I just sort of picked him up and threw him over my shoulder, and he's like, holy fuck. He didn't know how to react because apparently no one had done that to him before.
Was that the picture at with the Golden Gate Bridge in the background?
No, that one was the one that he put up. There were some other ones where I just sort of flung him over my shoulder, but it looked like I was groping him, and so he didn't want to put them up because it looked like I was groping him because the way I had my – because I had my hand like sort of looking like it was going up his shorts as I had him over my shoulder. So that photo didn't get posted, sadly. But he was very shocked that I just sort of threw him over my shoulder. And that's the sort of thing that I like doing. I mean, I like taking a big guy and just being like, you may be big, but I can throw you around like nothing.
Okay.
That's fun.
Can we see the pictures?
I don't have them. Tank has them. So.
No. Dang it.
But when my pup comes up, I will be able to throw him around. He doesn't have as much muscle as Tank, but he is extremely gorgeous and very submissive. So,
aww.
And how did you? Speaking of which, going back to that, how did you come to have him in your life? Did he seek you out online, or do you have mutual friends that got you in touch with each other?
Well, we met when I was in Nashville last year. It was one of those things. Well, I'm in Nashville. I decided, I like traveling, getting a sort of a big room to myself when I can afford it, so I can meet people and then decide, I really like you and you're really hot. Why don't you come back to my place and spend the night with me? And I met him. He was actually part of the Music City Cup, which was a rugby tournament in Nashville. And he was singing in the opening ceremonies to do the national anthem. And I met him on Growler before that, and we chatted, and then we met up the day of the tournament. And then that night he came back to my place, and we had a lot of fun. And we stayed in touch. And then when I got out of my previous relationship, I also wanted to be able to get my emotional needs met without much commitment. And I find that sometimes having an online fuck buddy is really good for that, because you can get your emotional needs met, but you're all both like, well, we're far away, we're not going to commit to this. And I really enjoyed that because it allowed me to sort of like get also my sort of my MS kinky needs met as well, because as I said, my previous relationship failed partly because those needs weren't being met. And so it allowed me to get those needs met, and then we ended up sort of like falling for each other, and now he might be moving to Ottawa. He's coming up for a month in December, and then he might move up after that. So we'll see. How that happened.
Nice.
Interesting. So he's going to be there for a whole month, huh?
He is. He's coming up December 26th, and he'll go back at the end of January.
Just remember to pace yourself.
Just sort of like, a photo or a video every couple of days instead of one every day. I don't want to overwhelm your feed.
One a day is fine. I'm not saying that's a problem or anything, but one a day. And
okay.
And maybe it's one day it's just a light little thing. Well, the next day it's a full blown kinkiness or something. I don't know. I'm not that creative in that space, I suppose. So
that's too funny. Well, good, good. That being said, Jeff, was there anything else that you had questions for Daniel about?
Not really. Kind of wrapping up. Let's actually move on to our next segment.
Okay.
Let's move on to our next segment. A very special edition of I'll Tumble For You. Today's Tumblr is first off as well. It's our guest.
Well, so yeah, it has to be.
My first one. And it's just one of his shots from the side. Here, I'll make sure our guest has a link to the shot that I'm using. And that's a very nice shot from the side.
It's my old Nexus 5 that was stolen. It makes me sad.
Oh, no.
That's okay. It was not an iPhone, so. There is no loss there.
Wow, that was
just a little hint here. Just a little hint here. I work at Apple.
Yeah, that was that
so
was
just insane.
Well, to be fair, I might be picking from the same genre time frame. I particularly like this picture from Tumblr. Oh, shut up. That you did for Tummy Tuesday some time back. Tumblr says 6 months ago. which I like. Although what I'm not sure about is if this is at home or if this is like at work.
That is at home.
Okay.
I think. Yeah, no, that's at home.
Okay. But I like it. I like the fact that you're wearing suspenders because suspenders can be pretty hot. And it's one of these, like, I'll just take a quick selfie and show off my tummy. See? Like, and then, you know.
Peekaboo.
Yeah. It's pretty fun. Mm-hmm. And you've done quite a bit of the picture stuff over the years. Is it something that just now is like a natural part of your day, so to speak, or your week that you're just like, oh, I'm just going to take a picture, post it online?
It is. So I you know, I like the I like doing it. I like having people enjoy them. And so I like putting out a photo every now and then. So I usually try to put out, you know, at least like a photo a week. And then every now and then I'll try to like do like a big photo shoot that's sort of more creative and fun and more sort of not just a you know, smartphone's camera, especially because my smartphone now that my Nexus 5 was stolen has a kind of crappy camera. So I like doing that. I definitely say, sir, I try to aim to have like a big photo set every like couple of months and then just like random selfies every week or so.
Good.
Nice.
Well, for that, since we're wrapping up, my choice of link is only going to be the one and only Tumblr account that you have. And for those that aren't on our website specifically, you can look it up by typing in BEARBERLYCRUSHER.
So
BearBurleyCrusher.tumblr.com.
So think like Beverly Crusher, but it's BearBurley Crusher.
That's the joke, yeah.
Oh my god, I didn't even get that till you spelled it out. That's too funny. I feel
you
like,
went, I didn't really? That.
Yes, I didn't.
Oh, wait a minute. That's right. Daniel and I are both nerds, so and you're not so much. Okay.
Oh, that hurt. I think I'm a little bit of a nerd. I'm not.
I said not so much. That didn't say you weren't nerdy. Just not as much as we are. I mean, for Christ's sakes, it's Crusher. What's the first thing you think of?
I think of a big bear Wesley giving me a hug and crushing me. That's what I think of.
Well, that's what I like about it. It's not only is it a very nerdy reference, but at the same time, it manages to be like this really manly bear, burly crusher. Rah. At the same time, it's a reference to a female. And so I like the fact that it sort of encompasses, you know, like the fact that I like to think of myself as very strong and very manly, but I also have this feminine side and I'm also a huge nerd. And so it captures, like, I think the three main things of my personality. And that's why I love my username.
I love it.
Oh, boy. I can't believe I didn't realize that or figure that out.
And speaking of which, you can ask him anything there, as well as you can ask us anything, as you heard last month in our Halloween show. So you can go to find us at cubsoutloud.tumblr.com and ask us anything there and see some gorgeous pictures, probably a bunch of reblogs from Beverly Crusher. Anyways, and there is other places to find us. You can find us at cubsoutloud.com. Leave a comment on our blog or also shoot us an email at cubsoutloud@gmail.com. Also Facebook at facebook.com/cubsoutloud. Also the COL Entourage group there. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/cubsoutloud. Google.com/+cubsoutloud. There's also the COL Entourage group on Google+. You can also go to bearunderground.net and join the Cubs Out Loud Entourage. It's actually spelled out there versus the other places. So just so you don't get confused, which you know what Daniel's part of, he joined us.
Yay.
So chat there. And that's not just for us to post notices that the shows are up. You can chat about anything you want. So, post in there and join the conversation. So, You can also go over, please go over to iTunes, give us a review, 5-star, 4-star, whatever. I will read it verbatim on the show. Also, if you listen, you can also listen to us on Stitcher Radio, which is a great streaming application. If you're out and about and want to stream the show, you can go right there. You can find me anywhere on the internet. It says box, that box, puppy box, scub box, something or other.
I can pretty much be found anywhere on the web as GearBear73. And Daniel, as our guest, how can people get a hold of you?
I'm Bearberly Crusher. I'm most likely found on Tumblr, FetLife, or Grommer. So contact me anywhere there.
Good deal. And do you have any travel plans coming up that people might be looking for you in their backyard, so to speak?
My next big trip, I want to be to Asia. I've done a lot of sort of Europe, and I've done a lot of Australia and New Zealand now because I spent a month down there, and I've never been to Asia. So I would love, I want to plan that out as soon as I have money again. I'm still paying off my Australia trip, and I will be for several months.
Asian bears.
Asian bears are very attractive.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah, I like chocolate, vanilla, and caramel.
Wow.
See, I pretty much covered everything there, right? Didn't I?
So basically you're saying that you love a Neapolitan swirl all over. Doesn't matter. You'll try all of it, basically.
No, well, who's red? I mean, besides the redheads with no soul.
Oh.
Anyways.
Hashtag awkward ending.
Say goodnight, everybody.
Have a good one, everyone.
See, Neapolitan ice cream is chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry. There's no caramel in Neapolitan ice cream.
I knew you were going to do that.
I'm like, that's actually kind of a good idea, though. Although caramel and strawberry kind of, I'm not sure about that.
So basically what I was thinking is that you would go into like a Cold Stone Creamery and be like, I'll take one of each of those flavors and just mix them all up. With extra nuts on top. But I'm bumped.
I love the nuts.
Mm-hmm.